Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of In Conversation With. Like many of these amazing episodes, it's about talking to, having conversations with amazing game changers in the FE world. And today, I'm with another fabulous game changer in the further education world, and I'm going to let them introduce themselves. So please take it away.
Hi, everyone. My name's Faisal Arif, and I am absolutely ecstatic to be here. And to even, you know, be mentioned up there along with the rest of the game changers is a massive, massive honor. So I've been working in FE for 8 years now. I am an English lecturer. I also have spent a multitude of years being an EDI champion, and I've been the chair of the Black, Asian and Minority Ethnic Network within a massive organization for a number of years. And I currently am a consultant with the National Center for Diversity and the Irish Center for Diversity, and a consultancy called Fig Tree. So I'm really, really happy to be here today, and super excited to make a contribution to Game Changers podcast.
And thank you for being a part of it. And like many, many people in the EDI world, you wear many different hats, but you did forget, what college are you at the moment? So we can just add that in there and celebrate.
Well, amazing. I'm currently at Southern City College in Birmingham.
Amazing. And thank you so much for being a part of this. And I guess like many people that are in the EDI world, we wear many different hats because it's part of that, we're passionate, that journey we're on. But where did like your journey start from, you know, when you think about EDI, like where did it start?
So when I really think about EDI and what it represents for me, it pretty much stemmed from my lived experiences, you know, growing up in as a gay Pakistani Muslim teenager in, you know, the British education sector. It really stemmed from my passion to take the persecution and adversity that I faced and, you know, turn that into something positive, into positive energy and into a positive force. And predominantly, I mean, I always wanted to give back to my own community and, you know, create a dialogue between the South Asian Pakistani community, because I'm from Pakistani heritage, and being the British part of my identity and kind of reconciling the two together. So, I mean, the genesis of my forays into EDI really began there, just from my lived experiences. And I always felt like I wasn't understood. And when I, you know, decided to venture up into FE, I always knew that I wanted to be the sort of practitioner who took all of those things into consideration, from curriculum to inclusive classrooms to being able to share my practice through CPD. And it's just a gift that keeps on giving, because it's just a labor of love for me. And I do find it really cathartic, to be honest, on a personal note, to be able to kind of take my pain and the things that I've gone through and kind of turn that into something positive. And that's how you turn a frown upside down. So yeah.
It is. And I feel like it's almost that sense of belonging, you know, finding your own identity as well and heritage as well. And it's going to be so many people like yourself in the FE world trying to find themselves, having that sense of belonging too. So how did you find that as you've like, how did your journey first of all start off in FE, and how did you start to embed, you know, EDI into that?
So my journey started off in FE. So I did a PGCE in further education in 2016, and I had the most wonderful tutor by the name of Kathy Lacey. And if you're listening, Kathy, thank you so much. She was an incredible tutor, and she really encouraged me and pushed me to really stand in my own identity. Because when you go into the sector, when you're training, first of all, the gatekeepers are pretty much not diverse at all. If you think about the gatekeepers who allow people onto PGC courses, whether they're in-house or whether they're, you know, you've got, FE colleges have like HE departments that teach like teacher training and stuff. And the gatekeepers are all the same. And the type of people that they let through are pretty much the same, particularly English teachers. And so, you know, my tutor, my PGC tutor really zoomed in on the fact that I had all these qualities that were valuable to the sector that revolved around my identity and my layers of intersectionality. And she really pushed me to really be myself in the classroom. So, you know,
I love that champion, you know, that championship as well. And saying there's a space for you in this area and like, you know, really like pioneering. So that's amazing.
I mean, in fact, it really helped me separate myself from the rest of the pack, because if you think about it, you know, life is really fast paced. Everything's super competitive. I remember, as a bit of a personal tip here, I remember going to job interviews and my parents would say to me, you can't wear makeup. You can't do your hair like that. You can't dress like that. No one's going to hire you. Mm. And then as I started to do my, you know, PGCE, and, you know, even in FE, as a student in FE, I was really encouraged to be myself by my lecturers, and it really left an impression on me. And when I was doing my PGCE and training, I was really encouraged to, you are going to stand out for who you are, and it's going to separate you from the rest of the pack. And, you know, it's all about bringing something unique. Being a gay Pakistani Muslim man compared to, you know, my white heterosexual cisgendered counterparts, you know, there's less of me and more of them. And the amount of CVs and applications that I have to put out there to even be recognized and even be seen, to even be in the room with them is exponentially way more. It's like gargantuan amounts.
And that's so important, that representation bit, you know, like representation matters in a positive way. And I remember like my own journey, you know, and like seeing people like myself. I never saw someone like myself growing up, you know, like in education, head teachers, you know, in different aspects. So I think having that having someone like yourself in these spaces and places is so important. So somebody can see you and go, oh, okay, that could be me one day, you know, and being able to have that. So for me, it's like, how important do you think that is for students also to have that sense of belonging and being able to be like your true authentic self in, you know, in FE?
I think it's extremely important because you think about the rigidity of, you know, the mainstream secondary school system and how it often can seem a little bit, I know my lived experiences, personally speaking, for me, I felt like I was in a concrete jungle. I was bullied. I was never understood. You know, being different, you're the minority. Mm-hmm. And FE is the place that I really blossomed. And I think it's super, super important for young people in the FE sector to have positive representation of their identity in front of them. And it just shows people, you know, particularly within my community, the South Asian community, the Pakistani community, you know, we have such a rigid, caged, there's boundaries to how success is considered and what's considered successful. Mm-hmm. There's like three professions. Either you're a doctor, you're a lawyer, or you're a businessman. Yeah. Outside of those, you're not perceived as being successful. So for me, I can only, you know, reflect on the impact that I've had on my students. You know, I resat my GCSEs. I did an extra year on my A-levels. You know, there's not one linear path to success. And that also revolves around intersectionality and personal identity, because often if we're different or we go against the grain, or you know, you are gay or you are lesbian or trans, whatever it might be, you are kind of put in a pack where people are like, oh, it's almost seen as an affliction and you'll never be successful. But then to be able to defy the odds and really stand in front of my students, so when they walk into the classroom, sometimes it's like gasp, like because to them, to a lot of my students in inner city colleges from, you know, diverse background, Black, Asian or minority ethnic backgrounds, don't really see people from their community who are really out and proud. So I think it's very, very powerful.
I feel like, I don't know how you feel like on this journey. Like, I feel like now, like let's say like 10, 15 years ago, even when I was younger, I never saw people from like the Black and brown global majority community outright, you know, from the LGBTQ plus community, you know, being showcasing and in a positive way. So I feel like, and you know, like I don't know if you remember the show Ali G, like back in the day, and how like just the themes and the terms and how horrendous it was, but that language he would use, it was okay. So you know, and like for myself, coming from a Caribbean heritage on my father's side, like the language and everything was we classed at the time, that was okay to use. But as you get older, you realize, you feel like no, what on earth was that? And how do we create those changes? So do you feel like more now, I would say like years have gone on, that people are starting to become more, have that sense of belonging within themselves so they can be their true authentic self? Are you starting to see that more, would you say?
I feel as though there's been a substantial culture shift in the way we look at issues around EDR and identity and the marriage between political correctness and, you know, ED&I, and they often are at loggerheads with one another. Mm. I feel as though the paradigm shift took place, and yeah, it took place, but there are silos within the community that operate, you know, within their own social norms, and certain things are still socially acceptable. And I feel as though within the mainstream, within the public space, within the public sector, there is an encouragement and there is an idea and there is a thought that people can be themselves and are encouraged to do so. But ultimately, you know, I feel as though it begins within the home and it begins within the culture for young people, even adults, to feel more comfortable and at ease with their own identities. I mean, after the death of George Floyd, which completely impacted the whole world, the Me Too movement, things that are going on in pop culture, the zeitgeist, it helps. But then I feel as though, how does that translate over into everyday practical life? And I feel as though, as teachers and lecturers and people that work in EDNI, whatever sector you're in and you work in EDNI, we have to manage that and create cohesion between groups and be the custodians and almost like the harbingers of the message, and it hasn't reached certain pockets of society yet. And I feel as though the more we talk about it and the more we are out and visible and represent a multitude of different identities, then we just get that little bit closer to it being more open. I mean, even having like openly gay rappers in hip hop is still taboo, you know.
100%, yeah, 100%, isn't it? Like, even now, you're only starting to see it drip feed through, you know, like media, those, yeah, you know, rappers, musicians, and that's really interesting as well. So my question to you on that then is, how do people start getting uncomfortable with getting comfortable? Because it's not just students, it's staff members too, like, you know, and it's about organisation creating changes in the culture. So what advice have you got for anyone, you know, on this journey saying, well, I want to showcase diversity and make sure people can be their true authentic self regardless, or challenge some of these behaviours? How can that start?
I think that's a double barrel question, Alicia. So the first part of that is, I feel as though people are afraid to get it wrong, and nobody wants to get it wrong and offend anyone. And people are kind of apprehensive and afraid to have those conversations. You might not know anyone who belongs to the LGBTQ community. I mean, I work with people who rarely come into contact with anyone that's Black, Asian or minority ethnic in their personal lives. So when they are working in the city colleges in the FE sector, or even if you don't work in the inner city college, if we're talking nationwide, in order to really meet our learners' needs, we must be aware of all the cultural differences and the layers of intersectionality that are going on. We don't expect people to be experts on the subject, but there must be a base level of awareness and a willingness to learn. Now, the first thing we can do is start training staff on how to have difficult conversations. I mean, I wrote an article for FE Week earlier this year, Managing Difficult Conversations Around LGBTQIA+ Identities. And that really takes a deep dive into how you can approach the subject and how you can manage some of the backlash, some of the negativity that you might get for even broaching a topic, you know, within certain pockets of society, which clearly seep into the FE sector. So I think there's a training need around, you know, staff need to understand that ED&I, it doesn't sit with HR. It doesn't just sit with a lead or ED&I lead or, you know, one of the vice principals or the deputies. It's a college-wide thing. It's just like safeguarding. Mm-hmm. I truly believe that ED&I is, or even anti-racism, for example, you know, and promoting equality is exactly the same as safeguarded. In fact, you know, statistics have shown that the negative impact of racism and discrimination is in fact a safeguard concern, because how it affects students and lecturers and staff members psychologically. So I feel as though it's about training, you know, bringing in those subject experts, having steering groups, having networks, and having those conversations with one another first of all, and then it can be disseminated down to the students.
100%. I think the first bit of that is, how do we get uncomfortable getting comfortable? And it's about having that training, having that safe space to staff to start having these conversations and challenging some of the status quo, and actually maybe challenging some of their biases that they may have too. And I think we all will have biases, but it's recognizing them and then actually what do we do with that, and how do we embed that in, like you said, to the culture, so it's everyone's responsibility. So I absolutely love that. So that's your tip one. Love it. Give us another tip. Go on.
So the second, to answer the second part of your question, I really feel as though representing different types of identities, and I don't just mean having two men holding hands on a PowerPoint slide, you know, or a trans person, like an image of a trans person on the wall. What I'm referring to is representing different types of families and health subjects like health and care, you know, business. English kind of lends itself. I teach English. English lends itself, but you need to go a step further than just using resources that are written by LGBTQI authors or cover LGBTQI themes. I feel as though that's an amazing gateway. It can be a good gateway to have those discussions, but we need to dig a little deeper. And the way we can do that is, you know, have content and curriculums and, you know, lessons that we're teaching and tutorials that reflect the customer bases of that particular industry, whatever industry it might be. And if you think about IT, look at the profile, the type of people that end up working in IT. How is that reflective of the local community or the global community, you know, and what are the type of identities that gravitate towards certain subject areas? And it's reflecting on, you know, customer service users, stakeholders, clients, patients, and kind of thinking about skills, knowledge and behaviors pertaining to inclusivity around any given vocational subject area and English and maths. You know, we can do that through case studies, scenarios, uses of vocabulary, discussions. I also, you know, believe that usualizing identities stems from embedding into the curriculum, representing different types of communities and identities through imagery, again, vocabulary, discussions. And, you know, when we walk into the classroom modeling behaviors, I really feel as though modeling behaviors as examples for young people. And this goes out to everyone, including SLT, HR, marketing, student services, whatever department we work in. The students are constantly watching us in FE, and make no mistake. So I really feel as though pronouns, not assuming anything, having an inclusive classroom for learners, even visually, all of that's really important. And I feel as though our learners do pick up on cues, our body language and things, the way we conduct ourselves in the classroom towards different types of identities and what our output is. Yeah. So I'm really big on modeling behaviors. So yeah, absolutely.
I love that fact that what you said, it's not just for lecturers or senior leadership team, it's for everybody. So if you're the front of health, your admin, if you're the reception team, if you're the caretakers, whoever, if you're part of that community of the college, it's about understanding that representation, you know, that part does matter. So it's about how do we do that? And I think like it's something really simple, just starting the conversation. So like for me, when I'm teaching sometimes, I'll just put my name, you don't know me, Alicia Sorens, put my pronouns to she and her. And it just starts a conversation. They might go, oh, or may not, you know, and it's about actually sometimes doing it from a student-led approach works really well. I don't know about you, but I feel like sometimes just stop and pause and then continuing and talking to students, because I think sometimes we assume that they are not knowledgeable in these areas and make assumptions, and actually sometimes it's ourselves that need a bit of a, you know, that support sometimes. So I think it can just create some really amazing conversations from that. So I think it's so important. But for you, how important do you think it is on the journey for your senior leadership team to showcase and support EDI?
I think it's absolutely critical. Without buy-in from senior leadership teams and governors, I feel as though it's a losing battle, and it can become quite disheartening. Because if you think about EDI, the stakes are so high when it comes to trying to create an environment that's truly inclusive, that is diverse enough to reflect a multitude of different identities, and everybody in the building feels as though they are treated with equity, because equity and equality are two completely different things. And it's definitely stems from the senior leadership team. And, you know, before I started working at Southern City College, I was actually with Birmingham Metropolitan College, and I worked at a particular campus. And the senior leadership team there was absolutely amazing. And yeah, I did want to take this opportunity to really give them a shout out, because, you know, if I reflect back on you mentioned earlier about the start of my journey, it was at, you know, BMET where I really was allowed to really fly and spread my wings. And, you know, I was given opportunities to deliver CPD. I was given opportunities to work on inclusive curriculums and do videos for Ida Hobbit and film content, and it was really disseminated from the top down throughout the organization. And I was really, really lucky to work with a really great team of people. You know, the EDI lead, you know, the principal and CEO, the director of HR, even the company secretary, marketing, student experience, they're all just incredible people, and they really believe in EDI. And when I think of an inclusive leadership team, I think of BMET. And I think if I think of a senior leadership team that really felt as though EDI was something for everyone, and we all had to have something, you know, that we believed in the realms of EDI, and it was pushed, and it was really packaged in such a positive, empowering way. I always think about BMET, and I think about the senior leadership team, and without that, I just don't think it's going to happen.
Yeah, I feel like BMET at the moment, they are doing some game changing movements in FE Absolutely. World, and it starts, like you said, about inclusive leadership. It's about making sure you hold space for your staff. You know, if they're passionate on a certain area, let them cover some CBD training, you know. And sometimes it's about taking a step back and supporting your teams, because you've done phenomenal in your journey, and that's so important. So I'm going to ask a question, and I get asked this a lot, and you're probably going to huff and sigh and puff at the moment.
Yeah.
But when it comes to, and I hear this all the time, when it comes to LGBTQ+, when we've got history, do you think we need to be doing more than this? You know, is it coming that tick box system? Should we celebrate it? You know, that's the first question. Should we be celebrating it within that month?
I truly believe that the LGBTQIA+ movement has been hijacked. It's been commercialized. It's become a moneymaker, which is absolutely fine. It's always nice to see lots of rainbow flags in all the shops that don't normally have it up. Mm-hmm. But I do believe that, A, we should be celebrating it, and we should be digging deeper into the history of the actual movement. Mm. You know, if you think about, you know, gay rights in Ireland as opposed to England, or even gay rights in America, if you look at, you know, Pride, how it started, and it was a bunch of Black and Latino trans and gay and lesbian individuals who actually started Pride, who fought for the rights in Harlem. And I think there's a lot of things that have just been lost to history, to time, to the halls of time. And I feel as though it's super important to discover our own history. And, you know, and that's when intersectionality comes in, because if you think about the relationship between being Black, for example, as in African Caribbean or Jamaican, and so on and so forth, how a Black identity, the history of the Black identity with the LGBTQ identity is going to be completely different to the South Asian identity with the LGBTQ identity mixed in together. And I mean, I delivered a session during Black History Month not too long ago that was, you know, surrounded the history and the genesis of Pride and how the Black, Asian and minority ethnic community impacted Pride. So you can't really have one without the other. And the kind of
it all links together, doesn't it? There's so many amazing people from the Black and brown community that are part of the LGBTQI plus community, but we don't necessarily talk about it. So the power of stories and what stories are being told is so important. Like even in civil rights, one of the people that kind of started that whole program and helped Martin Luther King, he's a gay Black man. So we don't tell these stories, and it's about what stories are missing when we think about that within the curriculum, and even there's some amazing shows as well. So it's about educating ourselves, and like you said, it's about that intersectionality bit, a part of that journey. And I don't know if you watched the show, and I absolutely love it, and this is one of my little tick box, something that you can take a golden tip from away from today. There's an amazing show called Pose. I don't know if you've seen it, but it's on Netflix. I love it. So for people that don't know about Pose, is a show that talks about the gay and trans community in America from the Black and Latino perception and how they were treated in society, especially back in the 80s. And it actually opens my, I didn't know about how with the AIDS epidemic and how people were treated and actually the biases around that. And it just blew my mind how, you know, and how do we learn things like this in history, and how do we continue? And even with Madonna, like the Pope, I never knew, you know. So it's about understanding and educating yourself on different aspects and overtake the characteristics, and that's so important.
Absolutely agree with you. I mean, you know, ultimately it's about creating a happy, inclusive, empowering environment for learners of all backgrounds. And I think we need to remember that. And I think often, you know, we can't just switch off and be, you know, machines and robots and drones and so on and so forth. And we bring a little bit of our identities and our personalities into the sector with us when we decide to go into the FE sector. But I really believe it's about the learners ultimately. Mm-hmm. And if we are aware of things that are going on, remember, Alicia, we're competing with TikTok for the attention of young people within the FE sector. It's a battle. And I think it's super important to always remember that, and to try and educate ourselves on the multitude of identities that are out there. We might not necessarily understand everything all the time, but to be aware of it is extremely powerful.
Oh, it's so important, isn't it? So we have any lecturers that are listening today and they're like, you know what? I need to start talking about, obviously, all non-tech carriers and support, but LGBTQI plus, of course, too. What tips have you got for them? Any like golden tips that can help them on their own journey today, or any senior leadership team members listening to this?
I feel as though if you care about something, it's going to flow. The energy is naturally going to flow in that direction. I think people should really reflect on some of the challenges that they may have faced pertaining to their identity, irrespective of what the identity is. And that is where you'll find the beginning and the genesis of empathy and building connections with people who have gone through similar struggles. Might not be the same struggle. So if you're a member in a senior leadership team, you might be white, heterosexual, cisgendered, whatever. And you might not feel as though you can relate to any of these things, but I'm pretty sure that you have faced some level of discrimination, or you face some challenges, or you face some barriers. And what were those barriers, and how did it feel? And I think when we start to put ourselves in each other's shoes, we need to work together to bridge the gaps. And that's gay, straight, Black, white, brown, everybody alike. And I feel as though practically it's looking at having those conversations gathering that data, putting out surveys, understanding the culture of your organization and finding out where the gaps are. And once you know where the gaps are, qualitative data, quantitative data, all of those things, excuse me, then you have a really clear picture of what it is that you need to work on and where you need to go and ask for help. Reach out to myself, reach out to Alicia, reach out to the National Center, the Irish Center, reach out to the ALC, reach out to other colleges, reach out to the Colleges West Midlands group. You know, it's really important. And I know there's a multitude of different forums in which, you know, colleges get together nationally. Reach out, because there's loads of pockets of good practice, but it's about identifying what your needs are, and it's not one size fits all, and where those gaps are really. And I think once we do that, it becomes a clearer picture, and then you're able to really put together an action plan, and you know, and the relevant resources that you might need and people you might need, and you know, it becomes a much more easier, it becomes a labor of love, as opposed to being so arduous. Because when you are starting out in ED&I, because it's so vast, Alicia, we know how vast it is. The subject area is so vast, and it can seem a little bit intimidating, but it's the first step is identifying why it's important within yourself, and then locating those gaps within your organization, whatever that looks like.
Yeah.
And then taking it from there.
I love that. And I think the main key point is actually one saying, as a leader or as a lecturer, I don't know, you know, that's the first thing I said. I don't have all the answers, but I'm willing to work and share best practices. So reaching out to people, reaching out to communities, reaching out to like organizations, that is such an important part of that journey. And I think sometimes as well, just because you might not have, they might not know what your, you know, the statistics are for certain community groups, but that's not mean that we don't work on that too. I think that's really important. So if there might be a rural college out there that like to say, oh, you know what, we actually, our population, or actually I don't feel like we've got students from these backgrounds or stuff. I feel like part of the journey is actually learning and educating yourselves regardless too, and that's so important.
I mean just to touch on that, I mean, if that's a really good point, if you might not have learners from, you know, a multitude of different backgrounds, that might be just from the local community, which isn't really diverse. Therefore, it's even more important to expose them to identities outside of their own immediate lived experiences. That might sound like a mouthful, but all it means is you need to expose them to different cultures, ideas, thoughts, knowledge, prepare them for the world of work, prepare them for the industry that they're going to go in. You don't know where these learners are going to land. It's a vastly, rapidly, you know, a society that is, globalization is everywhere in this society, vastly approaching. So barriers and borders and boundaries are not where they used to be. So, you know, we need to prepare young people to be out there and be able to handle any given scenario. And it's really important because, you know, academic subjects are not just academic subjects. They need to translate over into a set of skills to work in a particular sector, you know, employability skills, so on and so forth. So even if you do have learners and that are from, you know, the same background, it's not really diverse, reach out and do the ED&I work, expose them to different cultures and identities and, you know, layers of intersectionality that they normally wouldn't be. I mean, it's that's even more interesting to be able to bring that as part of your added value. I think it's extremely important.
100%. I absolutely love that. And it's about making sure we equip people for, you know, to go into the workplace and that space too. And that's so important. I've got one more question for you. I love talking to you and just listening to all the amazing things you're doing. So one thing I'm going to ask you, have you got any tips or tricks for educators that would like to be a game changer like yourself? Like you said, you've been on an amazing journey through BMET. You're an advisor. You support people, not just in the FE, outside too. So anyone listening and saying, how can I become a game changer? What advice have you got for them?
I would say seek out individuals within your organization who you can collaborate with. Reach out to HR, reach out to marketing, reach out to your ED&I lead, reach out to all the different sort of departments, student enrichment, student services. Collaborate, because I would not be where I am today if it wasn't for the amazing people that I've met throughout my professional journey, in and outside of work, that really believed in me. And it all starts with a conversation. That's why, you know, steering groups, staff networks are super, super important, because you get a group of colleagues from different various levels of the organization, from different departments, and you all get together and you all got different ideas and you all got different lenses. And there might be a senior manager in there who's able to give you that bird's eye view that you wouldn't normally have. And you're able to give a different perspective that they wouldn't necessarily have. So please, if you've got an idea, approach people. And I do know I'm not going to be naive and, you know, green under the gills, because I have been in the game for a while. And I do know that there are barriers. And that could be pertaining to 24-hour contact time for teachers. That could be, you know, if you're in management position, senior leadership, you've got loads of reports to write, loads of data to look at. I know there's time constraints, but it's definitely worth it. Not only is it worth it for the type of experience that you'll get within the sector, within EDNR, within the field, you know, on your journey to be a game changer, but it will also impact people around you. So it's kind of, there's an internal reward and an external reward. And you don't really get that very often from things that we do. Normally people go to work and, you know, we've all got to make a living, we've got to survive. It's about igniting that passion. And I think approach people, have those conversations and pitch your ideas. And if they're not listening, you need to go above them. And yeah, that might sound controversial. I gotta shout out Kris Jenner. I need to shout her at Kim Kardashian's mom, because she once said that if you're hearing no, you're talking to the wrong person. And she wasn't wrong. So when you have an idea and you keep hearing no, and you know it's cost effective, you know it's your own personal resources, your time, your energy, it's a good idea, it's gonna be really impactful. Keep going above, keep reaching, and keep talking.
Keep knocking on those doors. I think absolutely, that's the most. And you know what? Find your tribe, because you're going to find so many amazing people, game changers, and they will 100% support you on your own journey. And it's just about feel the fear and do it anyway. You know, that's one of the biggest things. Just continue that journey. I want to ask you one more question, I promise. Yes. It's just come to me, and I'm thinking, do you know what? When we come to the world of EDI, I feel like there's so many myth busters and assumptions people may make. And I think that's so important. So for me, I get, when it comes to Black History Month, for example, they expect people from like the Black and Brown global majority community to kind of, you know, give them the work to do around it for that month. So, and I'm almost like, it's everyone's journey. It's everyone to be able to embed it in all different aspects and unprotected characteristics. So what are some of the myth busters or assumptions you feel like people make? Especially around EDI or from the LGBTQI plus community?
So, I mean, one around EDI is that it's kind of like just a little bit of a sprinkle on top, and it isn't really impactful. I think a lot of people have this perception that it's more about a catharsis for angry employees. So, and, you know, people who need to just vent and need somebody to talk to. It's much deeper than that, because systemic racism, institutionalized racism, is alive and well, and I'm not gonna bite my tongue. And I feel like the society that we live in today, you know, it's very, very relevant to be aware of the things going on around us. And if you think about the FE sector, it is, you know, just a slice of mainstream society. So if you look at it in a macro sense, whatever goes on in the walls of the FE sector is a sample of the world that's out there. So I truly believe that EDI is extremely impactful. It's not ad hoc. There's statistics, data, scientific research that backs up why EDI is valuable and important from a business perspective, but also for well-being and engagement and, you know, attainment and retention and achievement and all these things that, you know, we're concerned about. So that's one of the first myths that I'd like to bust. The second one pertains to LGBTQIA and hate crimes and, you know, homophobic language, transphobic language, how it's, so how can I put this? It becomes generalized. So when it does take place, it becomes so generalized that, oh, hey, it's just a disciplinary issue. Oh, hey, it's just, you know, something that revolves around students misbehaving, or, oh, it can be dealt with. There needs to be a clear, concise set of rules that is laid out and that is uniquely constructed to deal with homophobic and transphobic comments, because I can't begin to describe the impact that has on individuals like myself and students, staff, everyone, even in the wider community. And it needs to be dealt with in a specialist fashion, and it needs to be really looked at and picked apart, and how that can be remedied through workshops, through tutorials, through training sessions for staff to challenge it effectively. It's not just a negative comment. It's not just a bad word. It's very, very impactful. And it strikes at the core of who we are as LGBTQI people. And I think people need to understand that within the FE sector.
I think that's so, yeah, spot on. And I feel like as well, if we're saying all the particular characteristics are important to us, you know, it's a disability, it's important to us as race, it's important to us LGBTQI+. So it's really important, how do we embed that into our practices and making sure we challenge those behaviours and not say, oh, you know, the old school ways or sticks and stones, you know, there's just words. No, words can have a massive big impact on people, on us and society, and how it can affect us through education and beyond in the workplace. So yeah, I absolutely love that you've just discussed that and as Mythbusters. So thank you so much. How do we find out about more work? If anyone listening in today and they want to know more about the work, how can we find you? What are you doing at the moment? Any sort of things that we need to know about, please shout out about.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you can find me on LinkedIn, first of all. My name is Faisal Arif. It will be in the description. So that's the main port of call to contact me, really. It's got all of all the work I've done on there. It's got, you know, who I am, what I represent, things of that nature. I'm also based at Southland City College. So if you are working in the FE sector, reach out to the college. You can find me there. Currently I'm kind of like Spider-Man or Superman or Batman or one of the X-Men. So during the day, I'm teaching English at Southland City. But, after hours, I'm kind of working on helping further education institutions, colleges, to get accreditation in the round of ED&I, working with the National Center for Diversity, shout out to them. And we're doing a lot of amazing work, and we're working on some reaccreditations, helping other organizations get accreditations, doing policy reviews, working with the sector, individual organizations and the sector as a whole to become more inclusive. And I feel as though being a lecturer and working within FE has naturally just translated over into my consultancy work, and I'm able to really keep my finger on the pulse of what's going on in the FE sector through my teaching, and both kind of facets of my professional identity inform one another, and it's a blessing. So yeah, I mean, if you need anything in the realms of ED&I, please do reach out. And it's been a pleasure just working with you, Alicia. And you know, we've been trying to get together for a while to work on something together, and I'm glad this has finally come to fruition and we were able to really do this.
Well, thank you so much. You're an absolute superhero. We say we're part of Destiny's Child, aren't we? So yes. I'm so glad we've been able to have this conversation today, and thank you so much for being like in conversation, Pete. And thank you again. And like you said, please click on the links below and you can see all the amazing work that's been taking place in the FE sector with our fabulous game changer. Thank you again.